Hi everyone, my name is Fatou Ogbuche. I am the founder and CEO of Big Tech This Week and also the host of Tech This Week Radio, which I consider to be like my little pocket of like internet radio where we talk to entrepreneurs that are building incredible companies and just doing really interesting things. We do this every week. Very excited to be joined today by Dr. Temidayo Onyeosun, who's a space scientist and MD of Space in Africa. So thank you so much, Temidayo, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And this is not going to be a conversation between him and I. If you want to contribute to the conversation, if you have questions to ask him, feel free to tap on the request button. It's somewhere, depending on what your phone looks like, is at the bottom left, or you can comment on the space, or you can send me a DM if you're too shy. And yeah, we're going to be talking today about the big thing that he did this week, which was sending a goose to space. So we're going to dig into that a little bit. But before we begin, I feel like, you know, you've had two wins in 1 week. You just celebrated your birthday. And of course, you sent a goose to space. So before we start, happy birthday. Happy belated birthday wishes, I guess.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay. So I know you've said this before, right, in terms of why you chose egusi, but I do have to ask you, is egusi your favorite soup?
Not really. I think my favorite is probably ewedu with tamala, but yeah, egusi is very nice.
Okay, because when we posted this on Big Tech This Week's account on Instagram, it kind of like started soup wars a little bit, right? Where people were saying, why did egusi have to go to space first? What happened to Eforiro? What happened to soup? And people were just like naming a bunch of soups. But I was also thinking, okay, not even talking about seeds, because of course not a lot of soups like come from seeds. But I know you mentioned kind of like cultural significance and all of that, but I'm like, there was also rice, there's also beans. So was the reason for egusi really based off of, okay, this is like culturally significant, lots of people eat it? Was that really the reason?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think rice is like native to Nigeria or to West Africa. You know, probably half of the world's population eats rice on a daily basis. Beans is also everywhere, you know, but the idea behind egusi is to look for something that is native to this part of the world that you can probably only find in this part of the world. And as you said, old cultural significance. You know, ewedu is great, but I think ewedu is like a Yoruba thing. Eforiro is also like a Yoruba thing. And I'm not even sure how they grow or plant that. But anyways, for egusi, I figure that it's something that I think every Nigerian enjoyed. And it also, it has deep roots in different part of the country, whether it's in the southwest or in the east, you know, several people actually lay claim to the origin of it. And it has also, it has gone beyond Nigeria. It's, you know, it's eaten in a lot of West African countries, and a lot of Africans in the diaspora. It's also something that they can connect to. So that's why the choice of egusi.
All right. So I have to say, egusi is, I mean, I guess it's one of my favorite soups because I have a friend who like makes a really, really mean egusi. But before we like really dig into talking about egusi, I just want to say like what has happened this week, which is a really, really big deal. And of course, it has you at the center of it. So it's SpaceX Falcon, of course. Everyone knows SpaceX, owned by Elon Musk, the man who wants to see human beings live on Mars at some point in our lifetime, hopefully, maybe not our lifetime, but he wants to see that happen in this life. It launched from Cape Canaveral, which is located in Florida, and it's like a really big city for the U.S. Broader Space Program, and also is the home of Kennedy Space Center. And on board the SpaceX rocket to the ISS, which is the International Space Station, was our beloved egusi, right? And it's the first time a seed that is native to West Africa, like Temidayo just mentioned not too long ago, and the first item from Nigeria has reached orbits, right? And this is in partnership with the Kármán Project, which is a nonprofit foundation for global leaders shaping the future of space, which you belong to. And egusi will also be joined by other crops from Egypt, Armenia, and Pakistan. So, you know, like, let's go see how these seeds function in space, and let's see what the research says when it comes back. So I'm really interested in how you got to like become the space scientist, right? Because I think the only thing I know about space, and I was saying this to my team when we were kind of like getting ready for this, is, I mean, of course, like what I pay attention to, but in terms of like my knowledge of Nigeria's involvement in space, because I grew up in Abuja, so there's like an Obasanjo Space Center, which is on Airport Road. So if you're going to the airport or coming from the airport, it's just like right there on the road. And sometimes like I wonder about, I'm just like, what goes on in there, right? So I'm really curious to hear from you as to, you know, how you became a space scientist, like where in, like, how did you even find an environment for that? Like, how did this all start?
Yeah, so I've always been interested in space. I did physics in secondary school, and there is this physics textbook by, I think, PNOKK or something, and it's a very nice textbook. And then the last chapter in that textbook really talks about the solar systems and, you know, astronomy and all of that. And I think for me, that was actually the origin of my interest in space. And so when I was, when I wrote JAMB, I wanted to do aerospace engineering, but this was 2010, 2011. There was no university offering that in Nigeria. So I searched for like the closest thing to that. There was mechanical engineering and there was meteorology. And I figured meteorology was atmospheric physics. And, you know, that's kind of like close to astrophysics or whatever. So I opted for that, and that's what I did for my undergraduate. When I was doing my undergraduate, of course, the whole interest of space was there. I set up a university space club. Luckily for me also, my university had the Center for Space Research and Application that was supposed to be doing space research and application, but they didn't even have staff and all of that. But I was able to get my university space club under the center, and we did a lot of, you know, cool projects then. We sent high altitude balloon up there, you know, that we couldn't retrieve. We did some asteroid search campaign also. And so, you know, during that period, I built a lot of international relationships with folks in the industry, and I learned like a great deal of stuff. And in my penultimate year, I actually worked at that Obasanjo Space Center that you mentioned. So I did a 5-6 month internship there. My dream was actually to work there, you know, because by then they had launched multiple satellites and they were supposed to be operating multiple satellites. But when I worked there, it gave me, I got a different experience. I thought it was like a version of NASA, but it wasn't anything like that. So, you know, it was after that experience that I decided that, you know, I can work with like a Nigerian space institutions. I have to start my own or something like that. But yeah, to your question on what goes on there. So the Obasanjo Space Center is that's the headquarters of the Nigerian National Space Research and Development Agency, which is our national space agency. Just to say, Nigerian space program is actually one of the most robust space programs globally, you know, in terms of the structure, because aside from what you see in Abuja, they have multiple centers across the country. In fact, there is a Center for Space Propulsion and Transport in Epe in Lagos. That's where they're supposed to be building rockets. That's where they test rockets. That's where, when Obasanjo was president, they had this 25-year roadmap that, they wanted to build and launch Nigerian-made satellites from Nigerian soil, I think by 2025. So basically this year, Nigeria was supposed to be launching a made-in-Nigeria satellite from Nigeria on a Nigerian rocket. But we're nowhere near that. So, you know, they've got this robust program that they've been implementing for over 2 decades. But the, you know, the outcome of what the agency is doing is unfortunately nothing to write home about.
Oh wow, that's really interesting that you said that, right? So of course, so number one, yes, things definitely happen at Obasanjo Space Center. It's not just like a building that is lighting Abuja's airport road. And also that you mentioned that, you know, Nigeria's space program is like robust enough to be considered like one of the, at least like top space programs in the world, which I actually like find really interesting as well. Because when I was like just trying to just like picture how, you know, we got from, okay, do we actually have a space program onto, you know, getting one of our staple foods in space, then I'm like, okay, there's definitely something that's happening in the background, right? Because a lot of these other countries that are part of the current project, they also have like their own versions of a space program as well. But so you mentioned, you know, due to your experience or given your experience at Obasanjo Space Center and everything you knew about what was going on like in that industry, you decided, okay, you want to go create your own company that does research. And of course, based in Africa, does a lot of like market intelligence and also these kinds of big partnerships that led to us being one of the countries that got to send food to space. So I'm really curious about the gap that you found, you know, where you thought, okay, these guys are not like doing the work to the level that has to be done. I need to go create my own thing.
Yeah. So the thing is, when you look at national space programs, so there are several elements. Then, you know, just to add to, you know, the reason why I said Nigeria is one of the most robust space programs in the world. So, you know, space itself has several elements to it. There is the defense side of things. There is the, you know, the civil side of things. And then when you also look at the civil application of space technology, there are different industry segments to that. There is satellite communications, for example. You know, I'm sure folks here know about Starlink. That's an example of satellite communication services. There is navigation and positioning services. We all use GPS, so that's an aspect to space. There is Earth observation, which is pretty much, you know, using satellite to take images of different places on Earth. And there's a lot of applications to that, in whether it's disaster monitoring, to urban planning, to agriculture, or whatever. There is also like the science and research component of things. You talk about astronomy, you know, understanding what is going on in the universe, you know, deep space exploration, human space exploration, and all of that. And Nigeria is one of the few countries in the world that have, Nigeria has three space institutions. We have a space agency. We have a communication satellite company, which is NIGCOMSAT. It's also just right beside NASA in Abuja. And now we also have a defense space agency, which is an agency that is supposed to be leveraging on space technology to address problems around, you know, defense. So basically, they're supposed to be monitoring our borders. They were supposed to be tackling insecurities and things like that using space and satellite technologies and data. So that whole structure and infrastructure is actually there. And we've invested billions of dollars in acquisition of satellites for these agencies to actually operate and use for, like, you know, different applications. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm saying, in Africa, for example, Nigeria is the only country with this robust type space program. And, you know, going to, you know, the question about, now, I can't remember your, I think it was something along the line of, you know, the gap that I saw and all, yes, of that. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes. So in 2017, you know, what I found out was, you know, then there were a couple of African countries that were developing space program. You know, Nigeria had a space program, Egypt, South Africa, Algeria, Morocco. A few African countries, they have space program. But then people don't talk about this space program. In fact, the citizens of the countries, they don't talk about this space program. They don't know about this space program. And so if Africans don't talk about African space program, then you should be certain that Europeans or Americans or Chinese people will not talk about it. And I had the opportunity to attend a conference in Colorado Springs in the US in 2017. And that was when I, you know, that was like my first, you know, big space conference. And I saw all of these people, all of these stakeholders, all of these big agencies from NASA to like the popular astronauts to like all of these guys. And, you know, I was having conversation with them just to under Africa, that Africa is supposed to play in the global space industry. And I realized that the same problem that, you know, that we have in Africa where Africans don't talk about the space program is the same thing they have. And I figured that there is a business component to this. And that's why I started the company. I wanted to create an environment where we could help African government to develop their space program in a way that is beneficial to Africa. We're looking for ways to, okay, yes, you have satellites, you have all of these technologies, but then how do you translate this space program into a way that benefits the average citizen, into socioeconomic benefits, into maybe revenue and things like that? So that's why I started the company. And I also wanted to you know, create value for like foreign institutions that wanted to do business with Africa. African space industry generates like $20 billion of revenue every year across like the different segments. And majority of this revenue actually go to like foreign companies. So you take satellite communication services, for example. In Africa today, you've got companies like Viasat, like SES, like Intelsat, Eutelsat. Now you've got Starlink, you've got OneWeb. And these guys actually take the chunk of that market. That particular industry segment generates like $1.something billion. And it just goes to like foreign companies. Even though we've got a few governments and agencies in Africa that also have this same type of infrastructure. So the problem was Africa was not, you know, we were not leveraging on the technology and the access that we had. And, you know, I wanted to create a company that actually addressed that.
Oh, wow. That's amazing to hear about even just like the revenue that African space companies generate. And I can understand, you know, why it also seemed like a viable market for you to jump into with Space in Africa. So, I mean, I know Space in Africa, you focus on like market intelligence, right? So did you find a lot of like early clients that were like willing to, or were just like open to pay for the kind of intelligence that your company was providing?
Yeah. So, you know, when we started providing intelligence, we actually found that you know, I mean, I always knew there was a market and, you know, that was validated. We, and majority of our customers in the early days and even till now, they're mostly like the foreign institutions. So the foreign space agencies to like the foreign companies. You know, we, of course, we do service a few companies and countries in Africa, but majority of that revenue is actually like, you know, from the foreign market. Like one of our earliest customers was a company called Virgin Orbit. You know, I don't know how many of you guys know the company, but Virgin Orbit was founded by Richard Branson. So Virgin Orbit was one of those, you know, Virgin Group, Virgin Galactic and all of that. And Virgin Orbit was building this type of, a different type of rocket. So, you know, normally the way you launch a rocket is like what you watch every day. You know, the rocket launched from the ground and it just go up. But what Virgin Orbit was building was different. They wanted to launch rocket using a Boeing airplane. So the idea was to attach the launcher of the rocket to a Boeing plane. And then the plane, you know, just go off. And then when the plane gets to like a certain altitude, the rocket actually launches into space. That was like the cool technology they were building. And the reason they were doing this was they wanted to be able to launch payloads from like anywhere in the world. Like right now, if you want to launch on SpaceX, you got to take whatever payload you have to the US to launch from there. But like Virgin Orbit wanted to, if you've got payload in Nigeria, they wanted to bring the rocket to you, bring their Boeing plane to you, and then just launch from your soil. And they were actually one of our earliest customers. I visited their site a couple of times on our market intelligence company just to help them with the business development in Africa. Unfortunately, the company, they went bankrupt. You know, they couldn't grow fast enough. But like they, you know, that's an example of one of the companies that that bought into what we were doing. So when we have a lot of, you know, other customers, you know, from some of like the world leading aerospace companies to some of the big space agencies in the world.
All right. Before I get into my plenty questions, I just want to welcome everyone who's just joined us on Tech This Week Radio. I am talking to Temidayo Onyeosun, who is a space scientist and also the MD at Space in Africa. And they just had like a really big win this week. They sent Egusi to space. So we're just kind of talking about everything that led to that. And also Nigeria's place in the space race, right? And of course, just learning that, you know, we're actually doing a lot of work there, and also as evident by his work in space in Africa as well. So this is not just a conversation between him and I. If you've got any questions, feel free to tap on the request button, or you can comment on the space with that like little quote button on the bottom right. Or if you're too shy, feel free to send me a DM. So two of the world's biggest billionaires, Richard Branson, who you just mentioned, and also Jeff Bezos, they have been at the forefront of space tourism, right? Richard Branson with Virgin Galactic, and of course, Jeff Bezos with Blue Origin. And you know, they are competitors. And I remember one time after Richard Branson's, this was maybe like 2 years ago, after Richard Branson's, one of like the first commercial tour to space, Jeff Bezos came out to say, these guys did not go to space. They didn't reach the common line. And of course, the common line is like the boundary between space and Earth, and is where these folks tend to go to say, okay, yes, we got to space, right? Especially on the commercial side. And, you know, Bezos has had a lot of like those kinds of trips, including the one with Gil King and his fiance now wife, you know, that caused a lot of controversy. So there's that part of it, right? Where it's like space tourism, you know, there are folks that's like Jeff Bezos that say, you know, at some point humans should be able to pay to get a seat on one of the spaceships to take you to the common line, to take you to space. And then there's people like Elon Musk who's saying, not only are we going to be able to do that, I don't even think he's really interested in, you know, that commercial space tourism. He's more thinking about humans colonizing Mars, right? So it's kind of where, you know, like taking food to space to actually like test it out and see like what sticks, and also making sure that this is like globally done as well. So Africans get to go to space and they have like access to the food, kinds of foods that they connect with. So I'm really curious about, you know, like how you see the space industry right now, right? Both on the commercial side with folks like Bezos and Richard Branson, and then on the, yo, one day humans are going to live in space on the Elon Musk side. And of course, him being the one that has a company that's enabling all of this. So like, how do you see, you know, what's going on in that space right now?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. You know, it's funny you mentioned the common line and how folks like, you know, Virgin Galactic and Blue Origin and, you know, are trying to launch people just right above the common line. Because for most folks in the space industry also, you know, when you fly on Blue Origin, they don't take you very seriously as, oh, you've been to space. You know, I think you got to eat at least like the low Earth orbit, which starts from about 160 kilometers up, you know, before they consider it as, oh, okay, you've been to space. But, you know,
just to ask, so it wasn't just like regular folks hating on Gil King and Katy Perry who went to, in quotes, space at this point. It was like even industry folks as well. Not hating, but like looking at
depth sideways. Yeah, I think most folks in the industry, they don't care for like, oh, if you fly on Blue Origin and you just go right above the common line. You know, they don't. I mean, it's like if you want to say, oh, you know, I'm an astronaut, I've been to space, then it's like, oh, yeah, we've been to ISS at least. Now I've flown on Blue Origin, you know. So, you know, I'm just saying this as, you know, there is a conversation around that also in the space industry. Most folks just don't care about, you know, the whole, you know, the whole Blue Origin narrative. But it shows, just the different sides of the industry, because there's a lot going on around space tourism today. You know, several companies are trying to play in that game. And then, you know, it's also not just even just sending astronauts to space. It's also about, you know, now it's, the conversation is about leaving and going to space for vacation and things like that. As you may know, for example, the International Space Station would be decommissioned very soon. And there are companies today, you know, that are looking at building similar space station, but just for, you know, for like vacation stuff. So the goal is, you know, the way you can go to Dubai for vacation, you can just go to space also and spend like a couple of days to, you know, look around, enjoy yourself, you know, before coming back. That is, of course, that market is very different from like the whole long space exploration market, the whole, you know, we want to colonize the moon or colonize Mars and all of that. But there's demand for both. You know, rich people usually, when, you know, when people have money and they don't know what to do with it, they like adventure. And I think space brings an interesting component to that. But more importantly also, people like Elon Musk, you know, visionaries like that, the, you know, the goal is not just about the immediate thing or leisure activities. It's about, you know, preparing for like the future of humanity, you know, which is very interesting. And just to say, I'm a big Elon Musk fan. And I think that a lot of the progress that the entire industry, is experiencing, at least over the last maybe 10, 15 years, I've been practically as a result of his vision, whether it's in, you know, reusability of rockets to, you know, long space exploration to even global internet connectivity. Like before Starlink, several companies have tried that and it didn't work. So, you know, people like that, they, you know, they help. And another thing is that when people envision things like this, it's also not just for like the future of humanity. It's also for ways to improve the way we live and interact with each other on Earth. And as you said, the whole, you know, long-term space exploration is where the whole idea behind experimenting on agricultural seeds actually came in. You know, a lot of experiment has been carried out on ISS. You know, people have been living on ISS for several years. They have to eat. But even eating on ISS is completely different from if people are going to live and walk and eat on the moon, because then you actually have to grow your food. Right now, you may not, you don't need to grow food on ISS because there is resupply mission every now and then. So you can always, you know, ship in new food and all of that. But then if people are going to live on Mars, if they're going to live on the moon, when, you know, where it's probably take a few years before like another mission actually come there, then we have to figure out how to actually plant and grow food in that type of environment. And, you know, this is the whole concept of agriculture in space.
This is also fascinating to me. So would you also want to go to space? But I'm guessing at this point, you're not thinking Blue Origin or, you know, you're not trying to get to come online. You actually, this is like ISS type situation. Like, do you want to go? Are you already making plans? Like, is that in your future somewhere?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, if I see an opportunity to go to the ISS, I'll take that. And this is, you know, this is another thing with space travel is it's either the government is paying for it or you're paying for it. Either way, someone has to pay for it. And when you look at a lot of astronauts in the West, for example, you know, they became astronauts because the governments were interested in funding those missions. And which is also why, you know, there is now a market for billionaires that want to go to space, because you can now just fly on Blue Origin and experience something similar. You know, maybe I won't pay for a Blue Origin, flight, but if there's an opportunity to go on it for free, I'll probably take it also.
All right, that makes sense. Okay, so I've just granted speaker access to Janie Daniel. Feel free to unmute your mic and shoot, yeah.
Okay, hi, Tammy Dayo. It's nice listening to you. I first read about your story on Zikuku Mag, and I was just really impressed that you're someone who's doing something in a very niche area that people are not really aware about. The first question I want to ask is, how did you, when you said you started the company and you were basically doing some research, I just wanted to find out the day-to-day life of how you started that. Were you just researching and then sending it to certain people and saying, oh, we have this? How did you do the research and how did you get people to actually see what you were doing? Especially then, social media, or the way it is now, is not the way it was before. I just wanted to kind of have an idea of how you went about that.
Yeah, so we started off doing media work, basically. So we were writing and publishing stories about the industry. So pretty much anything that is happening across Africa around space and satellite technology, we write and develop stories about it. And that's how we started. So you can't really monetize that, but then we went from that to doing actual research. So we were doing research that turned into like analytical articles to research that turned into reports. So we started selling reports. And then, you know, there are a lot of organizations that would buy reports because the research that is in that report, you can't find it on a warehouse. And the luckily for us, back then and even up till now, we're the only one doing that. So everyone knew that, oh, you know, if you want to know or keep to date on what is going on in this particular industry, you know, we need to, you know, keep track of this particular company. And that's how things evolved into like actual market intelligence to consulting and all of that.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Sorry, just one more question I'm curious about. When you said you started doing this research, of course, you can start writing it. Were you particularly posting it on certain platforms, or it was just something you did like a blog or?
Yeah. So yeah, you did the research, you publish the article on a website, you share the link of that on social media. That was basically it. I mean, I think social media was, you know, pretty much like this in 2018. Except I don't think there was TikTok in 2018, but like we're just using your typical LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Twitter, mm-hmm. Instagram, and Facebook, yeah.
Thank you so much. Okay, I was just very curious. Thank you for that.
Great question, Janie. So I also have to say, just to add to that as well, Temidayo's company, Space in Africa, I've just posted the Twitter handle on the Jumbotron here, which is what they call the top of the space. And it's such a robust website, right? While we're doing research for this, I checked it out, and lots of information about like what's happening in space across Africa. So it's like a really good resource for what's happening in that particular industry. And then, of course, one of the things that you also do as well annually is the New Space Africa Conference, where you bring together folks that are doing really interesting things in the industry in Africa. Do you want to like talk a little bit about what that conference is about?
Yeah, of course. I mean, so the way to look at the industry is there's the commercial side of things, and then there is the political side of things. So on politics, foreign governments, they want to interact with Africa. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know this, but even global politics at its stand today, space is an important component of it. So whether it's in terms of navigation to connectivity to data, you know, space is very critical. So for like the way US government or European government, the way they're thinking about their relationship with Africa, they're thinking about space. So there is an important component of that. And then there is the commercial side of things, which is, you know, your aerospace companies, you know, they want to do business in Africa. They want to sell data. They want to sell satellites. You know, they want to sell connectivity like Starlink, and, you know, they need data, they need information and all of that. So that's where we come in. And, you know, over the years, we realized that, you know, we have, you know, we've got a very good network on the continent. And then we have a lot of interested parties globally that want to do business or engage with Africa. And that's why we came up with a conference. We figure we can just bring everyone together to network over a couple of days. And that has been very successful. We started that 4 years ago in Nairobi. We've then moved on to Abidjan, to Luanda in Angola, and this year in Cairo in Egypt.
All right. So I'm really curious about you know, where you see the evolution of your company space in Africa going. I know right now you're really big on market intelligence, but at any point in time, do you think you're going to start building products in this industry? Would you, you know, start dealing around with like satellites? Like, I know you mentioned, you know, Elon Musk is someone you're really inspired by. So in your mind, do you see your company going into like actually building hardware at some point?
Yeah, we actually have a hardware lab. Right now, we're not building, you know, we're not specifically building space hardware, but we're building other type of hardware. Right now, what we do in our hardware lab is to actually test satellite components. So we offer this service to like, you know, different customers globally, where we actually test their subsystems or satellite component. Our lab is in Ajam. But what we've also done over the last, couple of months is to leverage on our technical expertise to build other type of products for like the African market. So now, aside from, I'm gonna talk specifically on why space hardware is difficult in Africa. But before I talk about that, the type of spin-outs that we have from our lab now, they're like some climate tech related hardware. Like we have a new product that we call Miri here, that is a air pollution monitoring device. And then we're also manufacturing different types of like weather stations, for like the African market. So these are some of the spin-offs coming out. One of the reasons why it is hard to build specific space hardware is because one, you need to spend a lot of money on R&D. And normally that money should either come from like a university or from a government. To invest private money into space R&D is very risky, especially in Africa. Plus you also need anchor customer. Like we've conceptualized a small satellite project for like a Nigerian university that we're supposed to do this year, but I think they're still having funding difficulties. So this is one of the reasons why we haven't built like specific hardware product. But I think in the near future we'll probably do that. We just need like interested anchor customers to be able to do that.
Why do you say it's risky to put money behind building hardware around the space?
So how do I explain it? So let's say you want to build build satellite. You can either build satellite components, or you assemble the whole satellite. So you're either like a components manufacturer or like a satellite manufacturer. So when people call themselves satellite manufacturer, what they're effectively doing is just assembling different components to like integrate to make a satellite. Now, in Africa today, we don't have any company that is building satellites. We have companies that are manufacturing satellite components. So, for example, a company can manufacture like a communication subsystem of a satellite, like a radio, or manufacture like a camera that goes on a satellite. And we have a lot of companies like this in South Africa that are actually building this technology. And these technologies are going on like missions across the world. Even some of the components have been to the moon and all of that. And it's easier for them to do that because a lot of that R&D were done in the university. So when South Africa was starting the National Space Program, one of the things that they did as far back as 1999 was to actually invest in Stellenbosch University in order to do a lot of R&D to be able to build that technology. And so a lot of the folks that worked on the project then, they are able to take the IP out of the university to actually commercialize. So if you want to do that as a private company, it's very risky because, you're coming into a market that is probably already saturated. And if you don't have anchor customer also, you know, basically there's a lot of bottleneck. And I don't think it's something that there is no investor that's going to give you money to do satellite R&D when you don't have a customer. So that's the problem.
Oh, okay, got it. Okay, that makes a ton of sense. Okay, so I'm going to get back into Egusi a bit. But In the meantime, Ned has speaker access, so go ahead and unmute your mic and ask your question.
Okay, so good evening, Dr. Temidayo. All right, so just one question. You talked about R&D like as one of the major issues when it comes to hardware. But would you be willing to, you know, partner with university clubs to do that R&D section? Would you be willing to partner with university clubs? Because currently I'm aware that a lot of clubs in different universities are actually gearing up towards things like this to be doing really good R&D, you know, developing robots and the likes, and contributing to research. So will you be willing to partner with those university clubs for this?
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure the value that a university club will bring for R&D. So like right now, the reason I'm not doing a lot of R&D for satellite or satellite components is not I have the engineers that can do it. It's the funding. So I either spend my own money on that or get an investor to like back that up. I don't think there is any investor that will do that. And I'm also not very sure that I want to put my own money in that. So the problem is not the skill set. I've got the finest engineers in the lab that are, you know, I mean, we're already testing satellite components for different manufacturers, and we're building other type of hardware. So we can do it. Like we can build a full-fledged satellite. The problem is not the skill set. The problem is the funding. So let me give you an example. If the Nigerian Space Agency give me, let's say, $2 million today, I can deliver a satellite for them in 12, 18 months. So the problem is not the skill set. The problem is the funding. So, and the funding can either come from a government that is willing to support R&D for their own benefit also, of course. I mean, SpaceX didn't get to where they are today by, Elon Musk putting his money, or, you know, it's a lot of NASA contracts. And that's the way you build an industry. The government need to provide the financing. So instead of Nigerian Space Agency spending millions of dollars to acquire satellite from Europe or from China, they can give us that money to do R&D, and we'll deliver the same technology for them. And by doing so, we would, begin to like build track record that would enable us to also get contract from anywhere else.
Ned, are you good?
Well, I'm just looking at like if possible, if there can be a sort of partnership within the clubs. I mean, a kind of maybe an MOU or something. I feel like we could actually raising something out. We could actually work on something. Maybe, for instance, now you're talking about the cost. It might be that the universities might actually come up with a way to do the same R&D but at a reduced cost for you. I think we can actually, like something like that can actually be done, because a lot of students are actually hungry for R&D. Like it's actually, they're actually willing to do it, but opportunities are not just there for them to do it. And yeah, if you give them that chance.
The unfortunate thing is that the universities don't have money also. I don't think there is a Nigerian, well, maybe the private university. I don't think there is a Nigerian public university that can drop $1 million on a satellite R&D project. I mean, these are universities that rely on 5 million, 50 million, TET fund grant. So it's not, I mean, I would like for ways to collaborate with University Space Club, because I used to run one. But I mean, we've worked with OAU Space Club. We brought them to our lab and we did some trainings for them. We can do that, but university students don't know how to build satellite. You've not built a satellite before, and you're not gonna build a satellite in 6 months. Maybe your lecturers may have some skill set or technical expertise that may be useful, but they've also not built satellite before. You don't just wake up and build satellite. You need like years of experience. We have that. And so if we want to do R&D, what we're missing is money, not necessarily like partnership with Space. There are other ways we can work with University Space. We can do trainings for you guys. We can give you components to play with, and we can give you projects to do and all of that. But remember that I'm running a company here. You know, I'm not running, yes, it's an R&D lab, but the goal is to develop commercially viable product and services. It's not, we're not a university, we're not a government agency, we're not doing research for fun. We're doing research because we need to make money.
All right. So there was, you talked about, you know, why SpaceX can even exist, right? It's based off of government contracts, NASA contracts. And of course, SpaceX is, NASA is actually one of SpaceX's biggest clients. I remember there was a time that they even had, and I think there was a time where I think NASA and SpaceX were in competition for some government contracts as well, if I'm not mistaken. And even in addition to that, SpaceX also benefits from like a ton of government subsidies. That's why, of course, when Elon Musk and Donald Trump fell out, he kept on saying, "Yo, you know, I will cut your subsidies," and was threatening the man. So I definitely understand, you know, when you talk about the fact that for space in Africa to even get to the point where you're now thinking about even building products for this space, no pun intended, it means that, you know, the government actually has to be able to like sponsor that and provide the capital for that. So where do you think we need to get to in Nigeria for the government to actually be able to start to decide, okay, at our next when we're planning our next national budgets, we need to actually make provision for space funds, because we need to start building satellites, or, you know, we need to actually start building products that will put a dent in this space. Like, where do you think we need to get to? Like, what kinds of priorities that the government needs to put in place to actually make that happen?
Yeah, so we are in a new space era. And in the new space era, things are actually driven by the private companies. Now, in the old space era, you had government institutions driving things. That's why, you know, NASA became like a global institution, because NASA was the one building. They were building their own rocket. They were building their own satellite. They were sending their own astronauts to space. They were doing everything. But then there was a shift to new space, which sort of like gave less power to the government and more power to like the private sector. Because at the end of the day, space is very political, right? But then the biggest client is still the government. Now, instead of the government being in the driver's seat, it's best for them to like sit back, drive the policy, and give the technology development to like the private sector. And that's why you see companies like OneWeb, companies like Starlink today, or even SpaceX, because that would not be possible if the government did not, you know, take a step back to say, oh, you know what, we want you to run this. We're going to give you money to do your R&D, to be able to build this technology and do all of that. And even up till today, like majority of, when Elon Musk talk about, oh, you want to send people to the Mars or to the moon or whatever, what most people don't know is that those projects are U.S. government projects. It has to convince the U.S. government that, oh, you know what, you need to go back to Mars, or you need to go to the moon. Now, and like right now in the US, with NASA, one of the biggest projects they're doing is the Artemis project. And Artemis is supposed to send people back to the moon by 2030. And they're going to be leveraging SpaceX technology and all of that for it. And so the goal is, and if you look at the number of people working in NASA in, let's say, 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, compared to like the number of people working in NASA today, it's the gap is massive. In fact, just last week, like 25% of NASA employees were fired again. That's because they don't need a lot of, you know, overhead at the government level anymore, because the private sector can deliver on the technology. And this is the problem we have in Africa today. Like Nigerian space program is still being driven by the government. It's the space agency or NICOMSAT or Defense Space Agency. They are the ones that are still running the show. Nigerian space agency has more than 6,000 employees across all of their centers across the country. They've got more than 6,000 employees. And then you're going to ask yourself, what are 6,000 people doing? They're not building any technology. They're not creating any value. In fact, they don't have any serious laboratory. So how can you run a space program with 6,000 employees without a functional laboratory? They've got hundreds of people with masters, with PhD, doing absolutely nothing. And so the fix to Nigerian space program is, first of all, but this is also something that is probably impossible in Nigeria. You need to reduce the work that the agency does. And basically what I mean is that you have to fire like most of them and then channel that money into the private sector and then watch the private sector deliver on the same technology that the space agency cannot build. We've been testing satellite components for like a couple of years. The space agency cannot do that. If we want to deliver a CubeSat in 18 months, we can do that. But the space agency cannot do that. And so what the government needs to do is to, you know, and the irony is that more than 80% of their budget, of the space agency's annual budget, is actually going into overhead and salary. And so you're just paying a bunch of people for doing nothing. So if they let go of all of those people and they channel that money into the industry, if the Nigerian Space Agency come out today and say, we want a Nigerian-made CubeSat in 2 years, and they call for, they put out a public tender, companies are going to apply for that. And guess what? Companies are going to deliver that for them in 2 years. Because for those companies, money is not going to be a problem. And you can channel a lot of, you know, talent into doing R&D and delivering on that technology. And that is how you grow the industry. And so if you have a company that, you know, maybe their first contract come from the government, they deliver on it. Now they have track record. Maybe their second contract, you also give them. That means that Nigeria would at least know that, okay, we have local expertise to develop satellite technology. And anytime we need a new satellite, we can just go to this company. And that same company, because now they've got heritage, they've got satellite that are flight proofing, they've got subsystem that are flight proofing, they can go to other countries in the world, to other companies, and say, oh, we can build satellite, give us your satellite contract. And that is how that company will scale and grow and become like a global champion.
Okay, so off the back of that, let me ask you, if you were the head of NASDRA or NITCOMSAT for a year, right? Like, give me one reform, give me two reforms that you'd implement, and like what your KPIs would be for those reforms.
Yeah, if I was to lead NASDA, the first thing I would do is to probably fire 90% of the people working there.
Jesus Christ.
But then it's Nigeria. You probably can't do that.
No.
But like that's the only thing that makes sense. And then if you fire 90% of them, every single project, in fact, you can fire 99% of them. And then every project that you expect the agency to do, channel that funding into university and private companies. If you give FUTA or you give OASU or UNILAG, if you give them $10 million, Those lecturers, those, you know, university researchers, they will deliver technology for you in no time. Some of them, they've got a technical expertise. Some of them have been trained on this. They know how these things work. Even some of these students, they know how these technologies work. It could be rocket science, but people can do this. So if you give them that money, they can deliver on the technology. And if you have, let's take, for example, you give the money to UNILAG, you've got 20 people work on that satellite. They deliver on that satellite. That's 20 people that have heritage of building satellite. Those 20 people can come out and create companies because now they've got the technical expertise. They've got, you know, you use the money to set up laboratories. They've got the technical expertise. They have the environment to build the technology. And then instead of throwing the budget to NASDA, channel all that budget into providing funding for this university, for these private companies that are spinning off, and watch them actually, you know, become something big in a decade time. That's, for me, that's the reform that I'm going to do for the space agency. For NITCOMSAT, just sell the company.
Why would you do that?
NITCOMSAT is operating about $300 million satellite that would expire in like 2 years' time. They don't generate enough revenue to cover 20% of their overhead in a year. So which means that a project that was supposed to be beneficial to the country, a project that was supposed to bring in a lot of revenue to the government, keep costing the government more than $12 million every year. And right now, they're looking for, because their satellite is nearing its life end of lifespan, they're looking at ways to acquire more satellites. It doesn't make any sense. You know, so the best thing to do with NIGCOMSAT is to sell the company with the remaining infrastructure and use that money to probably buy suya for Nigerians or something. Just don't buy new satellite for NIGCOMSAT, because historically they cannot manage it. They cannot make sense of the technology. So don't do that. If the government does not want to sell the company and they want to keep them operational, another thing they can do is to, you know, maybe not fire, you know, 90% of the people working them. But they need to turn it to like an actual private company and not a government agency. So right now it's still a government agency. And the problem with people that work for the government is whether they are good or bad at their job, they get paid. So there is actually no incentive for them to be good at their job. So privatize the whole thing. Let it be run as a completely private company, which means if you don't make enough money, you don't get salaries. And then they can actually go out and find business. We consulted for a similar project like NIGCOMSAT in Angola for their AngoSat 2 project. That project also cost them about $300 million. Today, you know, based on that project, they generate about $20 million plus every year. And like they are on track to, they took loan for the satellite. Nigeria also took loan for NIGCOMSAT. Now, Nigeria has paid back the loan, even though we had to take another loan to pay back that loan from China. But Angola is on track to make enough money from their satellite to repay back the loan and have enough money to even buy a new satellite. Over $20 million annual revenue. If I tell you how much NIGCOMSAT make, let me not say it. But then that's you know, this is an example of what I'm saying. We have the infrastructure, we have the technology, we just don't know how to use it. And the reason we don't know how to use it is because historically, the Nigerian government is very bad with anything commercial. So it's best to just privatize the whole thing.
All right, that's really great to hear. Hopefully none of the anonymous listeners or even the public listeners here work at NIGCOMSAT or NASDRA. And I'm sure they're probably going to tell your bosses to keep you far away from them. But welcome everyone who's just joined us on Tech This Week Radio. I am speaking to Dr. Temidayo Oniyosun, who is the MD of Space in Africa and who just launched Egusi into space this week about, you know, the journey to do that and everything that went on to make that happen. So if you have any questions, we're going to wrap up soon. So if you have any questions, feel free to tap on the request button, comment on the space, or send me a DM if you're too shy. I saw someone post in the comment section about, are we going to get a recording for this? Yes, for sure. The space is being recorded. So after this is done, I will share that with you as well. I'll just respond to you. Okay. So we have a question in the DM. It's from Bunye. So she says, what kind of data is being sold by your company?
Yeah. So this is mostly like market intelligence data. We don't sell actual satellite data. We work with a lot of companies selling that, like Planet, for example, Maxar. But we don't sell those data. We sell like market intelligence data. We sell data that you need to make informed decision about your business or your policies and things like that. So to give a practical example, if you're SpaceX, you're looking for payloads to launch for customers. So if you come to Africa, SpaceX, the type of customers you're probably looking for are, who want to launch satellites, who's building satellite and things like that. Those are the kind of data that we will provide for a company like SpaceX, for example. If you're like Starlink, or your SES or Viasat, you know, you want to sell your satellite connectivity, broadband, or even TV services, you know, fixed and mobile satellite services. So, you know, we sell the data about that particular industry segment, that market. we can provide you data of that market, you know, data on users, on customers, things like that, basically.
Would you consider Egusi as part of this market intelligence?
No. So Egusi is, you know, the reason for the Egusi project was, I mean, we've been doing a lot of, I've been doing a lot of work in the space industry for a while. And usually when people launch satellite, when countries launch satellite, when they do cool projects like that, people don't even talk about them anymore. There is a big disconnect between the space industry and like the African audience. I think generally when people talk about space, space technology in Africa, they either see it as, oh, this is a way the government is siphoning money, or they see it as, oh, this is not something we should be doing. This is something the Americans and the Europeans should be doing. And so as a company, you know, we've been trying to break that for a while. And that's one of the things that actually informed this this Egusi project. And as you can see, for, you know, probably for the first time, people are having conversation. People are having conversation around, oh, why are we sending food to space and all of that? And this is the kind of conversation you won't get if we just send a satellite to space. So this is one of the reasons why I got involved in this project. I wanted to bring space closer to people. I wanted people to see that, oh, you know what, space is not something that is far-fetched or something that is out of scope for like a Nigerian child. It's something that is within reach, and it's something that, you know, even individuals can actually aspire to go to.
And well done on doing that. Like, I really love the attention that this got, right? And for me, it also just kind of like reinforced what we like to say about Nigeria not carrying last, right? Like, of course, when there's an opportunity like this for foods to be studied on this kind of project, of course it makes sense that Nigeria would be there, because we just happen to always be at the places where there is like some kind of like leap in technology. So it definitely made sense. And of course, like, you being in charge of making that happen. So let's go back to Egusi for a bit, right? The photo that you posted, right, of the particular Egusi that is going to space, it was like melon seeds, so Egusi seeds in a Ziploc bag, right? Of course, it's going to the ISS, the International Space Station. It's going to be there till the end of the month, where they are now going to bring it back, right, with all of this research that has been done on it. So can you just kind of like paint a picture of what is like, what's going to be happening by the time it lands on the ISS? Like, what happens on board? What kind of environment does the ISS have to like study these seeds? Like, what's really happening?
Yeah, so this first phase of the project, we're not going to be planting it in space. It's just going there and coming back. And the process is, I mean, you know, at NASA, you know, the seeds were loaded into like a test tube type container that goes into like, you know, another container that are, you know, specially prepared for these, and, you know, other types of payload that are being sent. And then that goes into, you know, into the capsule, you know, that get on the rocket. And so when they got to ISS some days ago, actually, the seed has been at ISS for days now. So when they got to ISS, you know, just the way, like, you know, the astronauts, they, you know, they move from the capsule to the ISS, and so does, you know, that's the same way they move like all of the payloads. So the astronaut, they undo the same seed in the container, and then they put it, it gets on the ISS. And then, so that was Crew 11 that launched to space a couple of days ago. So when Crew 10 are coming back, which will be in like a couple of days, they would come back with the same container with the capsule and all of that. And then when the seed gets back, to Earth. So what we're doing is we're sending some of them to the University of Florida for experiments. Some of them would also go to HIT here in Ibadan for, you know, for experiments. So basically the first thing to look at is if that whole exposure to outer space, if it affects the seed. So, I don't want to talk technical terms. But so one of the things, for example, to look at is like the DNA of the seed. Like, you know, does the exposure to outer space, does it affect the DNA? Does it affect any component of the seed? in a way that affects whether it germinates or not. So when we're done with all the lab experiment, we're still going to actually plant the seed in a controlled environment to see, to also see, what the exposure to outer space actually has in it, and on the output of it. When we're done with that, follow-up experiments based on the findings could be, so let's say, for example, that outer space, exposure to outer space actually affected the sea. The goal would then be to study what that effect is like and see whether there is anything we can do to the seed in a way that would allow it to actually survive that type of environment. And then when we're done with that, we can also then experiment on, okay, let's actually plant it in a microgravity environment and see what happens, things like that. So there's like tons of things to do on this, and we'll just get started when the seed gets back.
Oh, wow, that's so fascinating. So there's another question which you kind of partly answered, but I'll ask it again because somebody posted it in the comments. So when the seeds get aboard the ISS, you mentioned it's going to go from capsule. Do you think at any point they are going to just open it up and let it just like float inside the ISS? You know how sometimes you see all the space videos and there's like things floating in there. Do you think that's going to happen or is it still going to be enclosed?
Oh yeah, that's probably not going to happen. It's going to be exposed. Also, because we have a lot of other seeds that are, Egusi is kind of big. We've got like a lot of seeds that are so tiny. And if you just let that out, it's going to cause like problem for the astronaut. Like, seed can just like enter somebody's eyes or whatever. So they don't do that to like, seeds or even like there's a lot of experiments that go on ISS and they don't just, you can't just expose it to be floating around like that. So that's not going to happen. So it's going to stay in the test.
Okay. That makes sense. But I guess, it's still going to definitely feel the impact of just entering a different environment, right? It's not like it's going to be like still protected in there.
Oh yeah. If you're in a, the way microgravity works, even if you're in a container, you still experience it. So yeah. It's not, because I can imagine that people are thinking, oh, if the seed is in a tube, then it doesn't actually experience microgravity, but that's not the way it works.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so Achivong asked, you already kind of answered it, but he said, would the Egusi seeds be returned to Earth for a second generation planting to observe any shifts caused by space exposure?
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're doing.
Okay. Fantastic. So, but for you, right, just giving your knowledge of the space and, just like the fact that you've done a lot of research as to, what happens in the ISS, like what are your own expectations of what, you think you're going to see when the Egusi seeds come back before even like the research tells you anything, like what's already kind of like in your head as to, okay, what the possibilities are with the seeds?
Yeah, that's a good question. But as a scientist also, I don't come with preconceived conclusion before an actual experiment. So I don't know what to expect, to be honest. Like I don't have any expectation because it's also even be bad for me as a scientist to have an actual expectation. But, I'm just as curious as everyone is to see, what the experiment or what the research actually tells us. And we're going to be publishing this in journals. So I would do well to like keep people updated on the outcome.
Ah, God damn it. Okay. That was like a very like scientist answer that you just, okay, fair enough. So what are the, hey everyone, if you have any questions, we're going to wrap up in like 10 minutes. So if you have any questions, this is the best time to ask it, or just like click on the request button. So I'm really curious. Hi. As to, oh, did someone say something? Nerd, was that you?
Okay, yes. So I have like, let me just try and summarize my questions. Right. So first, you talked about advocacy, right? So let me just say everything that's in my head right now is university clubs are actually coming together, right, to form a kind of body, a big body, to be a voice. So at least because we need people that can actually talk sense to the Nigerian government when it comes to space matters. forgive me for saying this, but I feel like they don't really know what they are doing. I don't know. And also, on the part of advocacy, I think that's what clubs can actually do. In fact, it is something that we are always willing to do. But the thing is, we don't really have so much funds. And also, even the clubs are even facing issues with regards to things like registration, getting permission, and all of that. So I feel that is one way that we can actually work together, because clubs are actually willing to do a lot of things. And on the long run, to even help companies like Space in Africa, because if we're able to talk sense to the government, I mean, release policies, do research work, we know what is happening on ground. We understand the talent pipeline. We understand a lot of things that the government probably doesn't see, but we see it because we are closer to the masses than the government. So I think maybe that's one area of collaboration that you might be looking out like that, that might actually work. You can reach out to Space Club Futa president and I think OU president too. I think they'll be the ones that will be in the best position to give you more information on what is actually going on right now. So, yeah, so that's what I have to say. And I feel like maybe if we can have this kind of solid government, private sector, public sector relationship, that's what the clubs are actually trying to push for. But if you can come in and then we can talk to the government, find a way to actually talk sense to their head. God, forgive me for using those strong words, but yes, because there's a very, very big gap, honestly, and they have to step up. They really have to step up.
Yeah, I mean, I work with a lot of governments, and I talk to governments every time. How do I answer this? I don't think there is anything a university space club wants to tell them that they don't know. I think your assumption about the government not knowing what to do is also kind of wrong. There's a lot that, you know, that is going on that you are not aware of. When governments make decisions to do certain things or to do things the way they do them, you know, you don't know the reason for that. Let me give you an example. One of the biggest problems that Nigeria faced today is insecurity. That's something you can use satellite technology to address. The Nigerian government, they know this. The Nigerian Space Agency, they know this. So you telling them about that does not make any difference. They know these things, but you don't know why they're acting the way they're acting. And I think that even whenever you get an audience to talk to any of them, you know, talking about talking sense into them, I don't think that energy would give you audience with them. I try to do a lot of advocacy work, but I also run a private company and advocacy is not our work. So if you're talking about collaborations with me, then, you know, except maybe you want my company to support you in something specific, and that's what we can look into. But we're not an advocacy, you know, company, and we do enough of that as part of our corporate social responsibility. But we're a private company, and we're always looking for money.
All right. So if by any chance we need maybe assistance, maybe financial or something, regards that advocacy thing, because advocacy too is not really, really so easy like that.
Yeah, we do a lot of advocacy work. We've given scholarships in the past, but that's just a corporate social responsibility. I rather focus more on talking business than on this. If you have a special request or there is something that my company can help you with, you can send an email on that, and, you know, my team can look into that. But that's not really, I think that's a conversation for some other time.
That's good. That's good. Thank you very much.
All righty. Thanks for your questions, Ned. So tell me, what's one measurable milestone that you think Africa has to hit by 2027, right? And what agency do you think is responsible for it? And this milestone has to go towards, you know, like what, I mean, you've mentioned that Nigeria has like a very robust space program. In terms of like Africa, we're kind of like at the top when it comes to what happens in the space industry. So in terms of like when you're like just projecting what needs to happen in the industry for the space to move forward, Like, what's one milestone that you think that, you know, Africa needs to get to, and who's responsible for it?
Yeah, I think one of the major things that, you know, that are going on right now is on global connectivity. So, you know, cool technologies and infrastructures like Starlink is coming out from the US. We've got OneWeb coming out of Europe. China is developing a version of their own. And there's a lot of conversation about an African satellite connectivity, you know, infrastructure. I think that, you know, over the next few years, someone needs to come up with a framework for this in a way that is commercially viable. Something like this has been done in the past with a company, with an organization called RASCOM, you know, that, you know, a lot of African countries supported, and they launched a communication satellite that was supposed to provide internet connectivity for rural and urban Africa, but the project kind of failed. So I think that, you know, maybe in the next couple of years, someone would come up with like a low Earth orbit type global connectivity that can address Africa's connectivity need. Think of like a Starlink, an African type Starlink. You know, one of the reasons for this is from like the security point of view, and also to like address a lot of local connectivity issues that we have. I think one of the agencies that are poised for this is probably the African Space Agency, which is like the Continental Space Program founded by like the African Union Commission. So I think this would be an interesting project. Organizations like Smart Africa, they're also thinking and talking about this, you know. So it would be good to see that come up in the next few years.
Alrighty, okay. We'll also be looking out for that as well, because I feel like now my interest in this has definitely been piqued. I think I've always just kind of like focused on just space and what goes on in the US and what goes on the billionaire competitor wars between like their rockets and who actually goes to space and who does it and what Elon is doing and all of that, and what rockets are exploding when they are doing experiments. But I really had no idea that, you know, like Africa and especially Nigeria had such a robust space program. So I'm definitely going to be following up on what's happening. And I'm also, I followed Space in Africa, which is your company. And at the top of this space is their Twitter handle. So for everyone who's interested in just like keeping up with what's going on in the industry, definitely follow them, read their blogs. They actually have like some really, really good blogs. So definitely check it out. So somebody made a comment, and I guess this is going to be the last question before I ask you my last question. Kufri Achibong says, would you consider building an open source simulated growth environment for Egusi in space?
That's interesting. What would that look like?
Yeah, that's the same thing I thought about. Kufri, if you're here, I believe you're here, right? Yes, you are. Can you request speaker access and elaborate on what you mean by that, because I think that's like such an interesting question. Or if you're too shy, feel free to leave another comment on there as well. I've sent you a speaker request, so you can request as well, or just like leave another comment on there so we can better understand how you're thinking about that question. But while you do that, so tell me, one of the questions I like to ask Dr. Temidayo is, if I were a genie in the bottle and you had an opportunity to be granted one wish, right, for space in Africa and the work you do in terms of like where you want to see your company in the next 5 years, like what would it be?
$10 million annual revenue.
All right. And how are you doing right now at the moment?
We're halfway through that. Yeah.
Okay. Those are really, really good projections. And in terms of so you definitely work with international and also like African companies who need access to the market intelligence that you provide, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So $10 million annual revenue from the next 5 years.
Yeah, that's just that's just doubling our revenue today. So yeah, okay. that would be a good one, basically. Yeah.
Okay. And as the genie in the bottle, I wish for this to be granted. Even if I know as a genie, I should be I should be snapping my fingers and it should be instant. But I wish for this to be granted. So Kufuor has not said he's not accepted my speaker.
I don't really know what.
I'll just try. Okay.
I don't really understand what that would look like. But I mean, I'm happy to explore that. Also, if there is any researcher that would like to do research on the seed, happy to probably make some seeds available for that. If there's any other Nigerian researcher that want to do that. And the last point I want to make is that we're going to be sending more stuff to space. We've signed some MOU that would allow us to send more stuff to space. So I think our next choice of seeds, we'll probably, make that open and, people can give us some pointers and some input on what they would like to see there. And we're also happy to collaborate with people that would like to do actual lab research on some of these things.
Okay, so he's just responded. He says, kind of like creating a publicly accessible virtual lab or software system that simulates how egusi would grow in space. So anyone, especially researchers and students, can run experiments and train AI models on it.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I don't know where the money for that will come from, but that sounds interesting.
All right. So one more thing. So kind of walk us through the journey of what happens when the egusis land back on Earth. At what point, like, where is it going to be? Where are you going to go meet it? What does, like, research look like the moment it gets back? Is it coming to Nigeria? Are you going to back to Cape Canaveral to go meet it? Like, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the seeds, that lands back, it comes with the astronauts through the capsule back to around Florida. And then the seeds go back to Kennedy Space Center. And then from there, they're going to send some of it, following my instruction, to the University of Florida, where I'm collaborating with a professor to do some experiment on them. And the rest of the seed will be coming back to Nigeria, where I'm also collaborating with some folks at IITA in Ibadan to also experiment on it. So when the experiment is done in Florida, we'll probably, do some planting in a controlled environment and, do similar things in Nigeria at IITA.
Okay, and would you be, like, posting about this process as it goes along? So, like, we can follow through and, like, see what's happening?
Absolutely, absolutely. The seeds are actually due back in a few days. So, yeah, I'll keep posting about this.
Alrighty, and definitely looking forward to that. So thank you very much, Dr. Temidayo, for doing this. I was super excited when I saw the work that you're doing and how important it is for even just like the global space conversation, not just restricted to Africa. And it's really a big deal. And of course, like, for it to happen the same week as your birthday as well, I think that's like really amazing. And thank you everyone that joined us and asked really fantastic questions. And make sure to follow Dr. Temidayo and also Space in Africa to keep up with the work that you're doing. So Dr. Temidayo, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. Thanks.
Alrighty. You are very welcome. And see you guys next week for another edition of Tech This Week Radio. And with that, I say good night. Bye.